The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Oh, a happy day.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, we're going to talk about what can really help you lose weight if you're having some problems. One way to keep toxins out of the body. Also, what carrots do that makes people more attractive. I'm going to share the latest on vitamin D for people who have COPD. Commentary by Chris Hedges, The Obama Deception, Why Dr. Cornel West Went Ballistic, as reported on Truthdig. My own commentary upon why so many people feel disenfranchised from our political system, and also what we're doing about it. My guest for a double special today, meaning half in this hour, half the next, will be Gerald Salante. Gerald is one of today's pioneers in trend strategy. He looks ahead, see what's coming at us, and has the honesty to tell us. Now, a lot of people are diagnosticians and forecasters. How many are accurate? Well, he has been accurate in over 300 fields, and therefore I'm interested in his input. What I believe is happening now on an accelerated rate. I began to see this several years ago when I was filming the first part of my 12 Tipping Points documentary on the environment, which hopefully I'll wrap up filming. I still have to, in a few weeks, fly over the Amazon, then go down to Antarctica, over to the Sahara Desert, up through the Himalayas, over the Russian steppes, to Greenland, the Arctic, and then down through Canada, and then into the desert in the United States out west. Then I should have all my principal photography done. And what I found was that the best and brightest minds in climatology and oceanography and all the other sciences of the Earth were all wrong. They were wrong in this sense. They all said, without exception, that the really bad that's going to happen on this Earth will happen in about 100 to 5,000 years. We're finding it happening now. So when I went back to these same individuals and I asked them, you were so certain by consensus that we didn't have anything to really worry about in the current sense, within anyone's lifetime who's alive right now on the planet. But it happened now. It's happening every month. And they said yes. One of them said, you're absolutely correct. Do not believe anyone who predicts that our problems are for the future and we've got plenty of time and we can handle it. He said, you're right. We're now in chaos theory. And what I've found is we are in chaos theory across all spectrums. Environmental, economic, social, health. We are in absolute crisis. The trouble is we're not looking at it. We're not paying attention to it. We're not even honest about it. Now, the question is why? Why could people who are reasonable in one part of their life walk away from a problem that ultimately is going to affect them? I'm going to talk about that in depth over the next few weeks. In fact, I'm going to be bringing in the world's leading astrophysicists and experts talk about this electric magnetic pulse that will hit the Earth in the next year. and why there's virtually no discussion anywhere in the media. For example, every one of our 104 nuclear facilities has to have massive amounts of water, more water than any other single industrial application for a single farm or plant in the United States. And that water is used to cool down those spent fuel rods, which are not spent at all. They're very highly radioactive. That's all working off electricity. If those electric pumps go out, as they did in Japan, every one of the nuclear plants in the United States could become a Chernobyl. In fact, every single one would become a Chernobyl. And it wouldn't take long. Wouldn't you think that should get someone's attention? Wouldn't you think someone would be planning a backup system? Don't rely upon the Nuclear Regulatory Agency. They are completely 100% compromised. They have no integrity. They are completely captivated by the nuclear industry. Even the dimwits of the New York Times figured that out in a front page editorial. Of course, we were ahead of that by 15 years, and then just 8 years ago, we did Fatal Fallout. They just got it. Gee whiz, isn't it nice to know that the paper of record can actually once in a while get a story right. But they were wrong in trusting that the Nuclear Regulatory Agency was working on behalf of the public. It wasn't. Also, I'm going to do a series of commentaries. I'm going to do virtually one commentary every single day of the year. Normally, you'll hear a commentary once a year, once every 6 months from most radio shows. Every single day. Because I believe that we're in critical mass. Meaning, if we don't start recognizing our problems and becoming positive in how we can deal with them, seeking solutions, it'll be too late when we do anything. Today, there's a whole area of where I was just at about 8 weeks ago that's now flooding. People's homes will be destroyed completely. The floodwaters will stay. This flood is man-made, meaning the Corps of Engineers, not anticipating this would happen, did nothing to prevent it from happening, and now in order not to have New Orleans and Baton Rouge, which sits northeast of New Orleans, instead of them flooding, they're going to open up a waterway that will intentionally spill out into all these farms and homes and villages, and that's it for them. Imagine just 2 weeks ago, the last thing on these people's minds was that their homes would be flooded, their farms flooded. Today, they're flooding. We just seem incapable of wanting to actually be honest about anything, and partly because it's political. Not just right-wing and Republicans denying that we should ever do anything in the way of making prevention an important part of our policy and infrastructure based on it and informing the public the potential. We don't tell people you shouldn't be living in Los Angeles because what are you going to do with all those people in Los Angeles? But we know it's not sustainable. We know New York City is not sustainable, but we're not honest about it. So we just dodge the issue. As they say, we kick the can down the road, hoping someone else deal with it. So in the next several months, every single important social, political, environmental, health issue, I will do a commentary on. And then ask you to call in our segment, Involving Issues. That's what we're up to. We have an extended program today, so let's get started. First, for those of you who've had trouble losing weight and you've exercised and you've counted calories, there's new information from a biomedical professor who's found that onions, green tea, and olive leaf extract can fight obesity and its related diseases like heart disease, diabetes, and fatty liver, even when a high-fat and high-carbohydrate diet is indulged in. Professor Lindsay Brown at the University of South Queensland tested these, what I would call, power foods, and found that even when the test subjects were on a high-fat, high-sugar diet and creating massive inflammatory cell damage, that they were still able to reduce the inflammation and reduce the fat accumulation. This was published in the Journal of Nutrition and Current Pharmaceutical Biotechnology. So what they found is this, that onions, green tea, there's your polyphenols, and catechins, olive leaf extract, which is a phenomenal anti-inflammatory. Anyone with sore throat, flu, cold symptoms, strep, should be taking olive leaf extract. Purple carrots, which are extremely nutritious, and chia seeds, that C-H-I-A, chia seeds, decreased the number of fat cells and turned off inflammation. And that improved liver and heart function. So, that's something you can eat, easy to do. The flavonoids, such as onions and olive leaf extract, contain what is called rutin, R-U-T-I-N. But, by the way, rutin's also in apples and red wine. And that can help reverse metabolic changes of people who are on a high-fat, high-sugar diet. So it can help save your life. I'm doing a rather extensive scholarly paper on vegetarianism that will hopefully once and for all, at least up to this point, challenge back all those who think that we need meat and the zone diets and the blood type diets and that we were born to be carnivorous, none of which is true. And we have all the science on our side, providing that you choose to be a healthy vegetarian. This is just the latest. A vegan diet can help keep toxins away. And that means you stick to a healthy vegan diet. If you're a vegan diet at least 5 days a week, you can significantly reduce the body's amount of antibiotics and phthalates. That's a chemical added to plastics. And that can help then detoxify the body. So that's what we have to do. Now imagine that you drink juices, and the juices are rich in natural chelating compounds. They take heavy metals out of the blood. So if you have had plastic in your life, which everyone has, you've drank from plastic water bottles, you've stored food in plastic containers, you've bought food, maybe you even stuck something in plastic into a microwave at some point. All of that has caused the leaching of those chemicals that for decades we were told are safe. Now we're told they're not into our body. So by taking vitamin C in a juice, the green juice and vitamin C, I suggest 1 to 3,000 milligrams of vitamin C or to biotolerance with a 16-ounce glass of juice. Now an ideal chelating juice would be to have celery, cucumber, parsley, watercress, apple, and lemon. That would be a phenomenal natural chelating juice. Spike it with some vitamin C, and you're able to get the toxins out of your body, and that helps you stay healthy, healthier than if you didn't do it. Now, there's new research that shows that those of you who eat a lot of plums and carrots are going to have a real improvement in your skin. In fact, you'll have a more glowing skin, attractive and healthy skin, and the yellow pigments called carotenoids found in certain fruits and vegetables play a key role in giving the skin its hue. The studies of this, the authors of this study said that they found that people look younger, their skin was healthier, less blemishes, the more plums and vegetables. This was done at the St. Andrews and Bristol University in England. Next up, one more thing from our health segment. Vitamin D improves exercise outcomes in patients with COPD. Now, for those of you who don't understand what it is, it's C is chronic, O is obstructive, P is pulmonary, and D is disease. Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. So if you take vitamin D at 2,000 units, you get more pulmonary rehabilitation benefits, so you can exercise better. So something easy to do, not difficult, and we should do it. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment with commentaries and some insights, and then, of course, time for you to call in and share your points of view. Please stay with us.
Change, 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 change
Gary Knoll. Joining me in studio in New York City is Elizabeth, who reads your mail, and Gerald Salante will be with us shortly. I've asked Gerald to come on and listen to a commentary and some of your responses. I'm going to be asking Gerald Salante to deal with things such as how the FCC commissioner cashes in at your expense. That's the person that just made that big deal allowing Comcast and NBC to merge. Well, all the while knowing that they were going to take this job, a big paying job, to leave the Federal Communications Commission and go to work for the very people who they're overseeing. And also, speculation explains more about oil prices than anything else. How a new study shows it has nothing to do with supply and demand. It has nothing to do with the Middle East crisis. It has to do with Wall Street firms and hedge funds betting on the price of oil and trading oil that they'll never take possession of and causing the price to skyrocket. What really hurts us. Why don't we talk about this? Why don't we name these people? Why doesn't the major media name them? Well, we're going to talk about all these things and a lot more with Gerald in a moment. The moral philosopher Cornel West, who is familiar with people in this audience, has a lot to say. And he spoke with Chris Hedges about this. And the issue is this. If Barack Obama's ascent to power was a morality play, would be the voice of conscience, would be Cornel West. Rahm Emanuel, who became mayor of Chicago today, officially, a cynical product of the Chicago political machine, would be Satan. And Emanuel, in the first scene of the play, would dangle power, privilege, fame, and money before Obama. Cornel West would warn Obama that the quality of a life is defined by its moral commitment, that his legacy will be determined by his willingness to defy the cruel assault by the corporate state and the financial elite against the poor and working men and women, and that justice must never be sacrificed on the altar of power. Perhaps there was never much of a struggle in Obama's heart. Perhaps West only provided a moral veneer. Perhaps the dark heart of Emanuel was always the dark heart of Obama. Only Obama knows. But we know how the play ends. Cornel West is banished like Honest Kent in King Lear. Emanuel and immoral mediocrities, from Lawrence Summers to Timothy Geithner to Robert Gates, he was on 60 Minutes, by the way, last night. Think of Reagan in Shakespeare's tragedy. They take power. We lose, and Obama becomes an obedient servant of the corporate elite in exchange for the hollow trappings of authority. No one grasped this tragic descent better than West, who did 65 campaign events for Obama, believed in the potential for change, and was encouraged by the populist rhetoric of the Obama campaign. He now nurses, like many others who place their faith in Obama, the anguish of the deceived, manipulated, and betrayed. He bitterly describes Obama as a black mascot of Wall Street oligarchs and a black puppet of corporate plutocrats. And now he has become head of the American killing machine and is proud of it. End quote. Virtually all that I'm going to say now is from Cornel West, so I will not preface it with quotes. When you look at a society, you look at it through the lens of the least of these, the weak and the vulnerable. You are committed to loving them first, not exclusively, but first, and therefore giving them priority. And even at this moment, when the empire is in deep decline, the culture is in deep decay, the political system is broken, where nearly everyone is up for sale, you say, all I have is the subversive memory of those who came before. Personal integrity, trying to live a decent life, and a willingness to live and die for the love of folk who are catching hell. This means civil disobedience, going to jail, supporting progressive forms of social unrest, if they, in fact, awaken the conscience, whatever conscience is left, of the nation. And that's where I find myself now. Again, I am quoting Cornel West. I have to take some responsibility because I supported Obama. I would have been reading into it more than there was, if I chose to. I was thinking maybe he has at least some progressive populist instincts that could become more manifest after the cautious policies of being a senator and working with Joe Lieberman as his mentor. But it became very clear when I looked at the neoliberal economic team, the first announcements of Lawrence Summers and Timothy Geithner. I went ballistic. I said, oh my God, I really have been misled at a very deep level. And the same is true of Dennis Ross and the other neo-imperial elites. I said, I have been thoroughly misled. All this populist language is just a facade. I was under the impression that he might bring in voices of Brother Joseph Stiglitz and Brother Paul Krugman. I figured, okay, given the structure of constraints of the capitalist democratic procedure, that's probably the best we could do. But at least he would have some voices concerned about working people, dealing with the issues of jobs and downsizing in banks, some semblance of democratic accountability for Wall Street oligarchs and corporate plutocrats who are just running amok. I was completely wrong. But I was betrayed on two levels. There is the personal level. I used to call my dear brother Obama every 2 weeks. I said a prayer on the phone for him, especially before a debate. I never got a call back. And when I ran into him in the state capitol in South Carolina, when I was down there campaigning for him, he was very kind. The first thing he told me was, Brother West, I feel so bad. I haven't called you back. You've been calling me so much. You've given me so much love and such support and what have you. And I said, I know you're very busy. But then a month or and a half later, I would run into other people on the campaign, and he's calling them all the time. And I said, wow, this is kind of strange. He doesn't have time, even 2 seconds, to say thank you, or I'm glad you're pulling for me and praying for me. But he's calling all these other people. I said, this is very interesting. And then it turns out, with the inauguration, I could not get a ticket with my mother and my brother. I said, this is very strange. We drive into a hotel and the guy picks up my bags, the busboy, from the hotel, and he has a ticket to the inauguration. My mom says, that's something that this dear brother can get a ticket and you can't get one, honey. All the work you did for him from Iowa, being in Iowa to Ohio. So we watched the whole thing in the hotel on television. What it said to me on a personal level was that Brother Barack Obama had no sense of gratitude, no sense of loyalty, no sense of even courtesy, no sense of decency, just to say thank you. Is this the kind of manipulative Machiavellian orientation we ought to get used to? That's what's on the personal level. But there was also the betrayal on the political and ideological level. It became very clear to me, as the announcements were being made, that this was going to be a newcomer, in many ways like Bill Clinton, who wanted to reassure the establishment by bringing in persons they felt comfortable with, that we were really going to get something from someone who was using intermittent progressive populist language in order to justify a centrist neoliberalist policy that we see the opportunism of Bill Clinton. It was very much going to be a kind of blackface of the DLC, Democratic Leadership Council. End quote. Now, according to Chris Hedges, Obama and Dr. Cornel West's last personal contact took place a year ago at a gathering of the Urban League when West says Obama, quote, cussed me out. Obama, after his address, which prompted his administration's championing of charter schools, approached West, who was seated in the front row. Quote, he makes a beeline right to me about the talk after the talk in front of everyone. He just lets me have it. He says, you ought to be ashamed of yourself, saying I'm not a progressive. Is that the best you can do? Who do you think you are? I just smiled, I shook my head, and my sister hollered in the back, you can't talk to Professor West. That's Dr. Cornel West. Who do you think you are? Well, you can go to jail for talking to the president like that. You got to watch yourself. I wanted to slap him on the side of his head. This was so disrespectful. That's what I didn't like. I'd already been called, along with all the other leftists, quote, an effing retard by Rahm Emanuel because we had critiques of the president. Valerie Jarrett, a senior advisor to the president, has, West said, phoned him to complain about his critiques of Obama. Jarrett was especially perturbed, West says, when he said in an interview last year that he saw a lot of Malcolm X and Ella Baker in Michelle Obama. Jarrett told him his comments were not complimentary to the First Lady. I said, in the world that I live in that which authorizes my reality, Ella Baker is a towering figure. Well, if I say there's a lot of Ella Baker in Michelle Obama, that's a compliment. She can take it any other way she wants. I can tell her I'm sorry it offended her, but I'm not going to change the truth. She's a Harvard Law graduate, a Princeton graduate, and she deals with child obesity in military families. Why doesn't she visit a prison? Why not spend time in the hood? That's where she is, but she can't do it. I think my brother Barack Obama has a certain fear of being a free black man. It's understandable. As a young brother who grows up in a white context, brain African-American father, he's always had to fear being a white man with a black skin. All he has known culturally is white. He is just as human as I am. But that is his cultural formation. When he meets an independent black brother, it is frightening. And that's true for a white brother. When you get a white brother who meets a free, independent black man, they got to be mature, really embrace fully what the brother is saying to them. It's a tension, given the history. It can be overcome. Obama coming out of Kansas, influence, white, loving grandparents coming out of Hawaii and Indonesia. When he meets these independent black folk who have a history of slavery, Jim Crow, Jane Crow, and so on, but he's very apprehensive. He has a certain rootlessness, draconianism. It is understandable. He feels most comfortable with upper-middle-class white Jewish men who consider themselves very smart, very savvy, very effective in getting what they want. He's got two homes. He's got his family and whatever challenges go on there in this other home. Larry Summer blows his mind because he's so smart. He's got establishment connections. He's embracing me. It is this smartness, this truncated brilliance that titillates and stimulates Brother Barack and makes him feel at home. This is very sad to me. This was maybe America's last chance to fight back against the greed of Wall Street oligarchs and corporate plutocrats to generate some serious discussion about public interest and common good that sustains any democratic experiment. We are squeezing out all of the democratic juices we have. The escalation of the class war against the poor, the working class, is intense. More and more working people are beaten down. They are world weary. They are into self-medication. They are turning on each other. They are scapegoating the most vulnerable rather than confronting the most powerful. It is profoundly human response to public catastrophe. I thought Barack Obama could have provided some way out, but he lacks backbone. Can you imagine if Barack Obama had taken office and deliberately educated and taught the American people about the nature of the financial catastrophe and what greed was really taking place? If he had told us what kind of mechanisms of accountability need to be in place, if he had focused on homeowners rather than on investment banks for bailouts and engaged in massive job creation, he could have nipped the bud right in the right-wing populism of the Tea Party folk. The Tea Party folk are right when they say the government is corrupt. It is corrupt. Big business and banks have taken over government and corrupted it in deep ways. We have got to attempt to tell the truth, and the truth is painful. It is the truth that is against the thick lies of the mainstream. In telling that truth, we become so maladjusted to the prevailing injustice that the Democratic Party, more and more, is not just spineless, as it was before, but thoroughly complicitous with some of the worst things in the American empire. I don't think in good conscience I could tell anyone to vote for Obama. If it turns out in the end that we have a crypto-fascist movement and the only thing standing between us and fascism is Barack Obama, then we have to put our foot on the brake. But if we've got to think seriously of third-party candidates, third formations, third parties, Our last hope is to generate a democratic awakening among our fellow citizens. This means raising our voices very loud and strong, bearing witness individually and collectively. Tavis Smiley and I have talked about ways of civil disobedience, beginning with ways for us to both get arrested, to galvanize attention to the plight of those in prisons, in the hoods, in poor white communities. We must never give up. We must never allow hope to be eliminated or suffocated. Cornel West, as in a conversation with Chris Hedges, with my comments, I'm Gary Nall. Your turn. We have our guest, Gerald Salonte, on the line. I'm going to give our 800 number for just a few calls, and then we're going to go directly to Gerald for his comments on this as well. 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I'm going to ask Elizabeth to stand by. We'll get to her in our next segment, which will be in a half hour. Back in a moment with your comments and my guest, Gerald Salonte. Gary Nall. We're going to go to our guest, Charles Salonte, in a moment, but let's say hello to John from Long Island. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi, Gary. I know you hear this a lot, but I got to tell you, you really have my blessings, and it comes from the heart. It comes from the heart. I'm a warrior. I've been fighting for a few years, and when I hear you, I see no difference between myself and you, although there are some things that I gravitate towards more as far as fighting this war against darkness, because that's what it is. It's an agenda. It's population control. I know you don't come out and say it, but that's what it is, and I know you know it. But once again, I want to give you my blessing, and I wanted to quickly talk about global warming.
Sure.
Have you seen the documentary Global Warming or Global Governance?
Yes, I have.
All right. What are your feelings on the fact that they've brought scientists into this, and they are saying that this is, we contribute. Global warming is a fact. It is happening, but the science says that the universe, the planets in the universe are warming up, and that this is a naturally occurring cycle, and that it can be seen when they drill into the glacier caps, and it can be traced and documented. How do you feel about that?
Okay. There's two parts to this. Part one is, yes, global warming is real. Yes, it is both an extension of natural cycles, that they are correct, but more than anything, you can chart this, and I have. Remember, I've been spending 7 years full-time reading thousands upon thousands of scientific articles, interviewing more individual scientists than anyone, I'll bet, in the United States has. There's no human being I know of who's interviewed as many different scientists on global warming and looked at the papers because of this documentary I'm doing. It is clear if you look at a chart from the 1800s when the industrial civilization began and we began to use coal and oil, and then gas, you start to see climate change increasing. Now you see that the connection between global warming, man-made global warming, and the environmental destruction is accelerating. So there has been a massive effort on behalf of the oil cartels, the coal cartels, the gas cartels, to buy public opinion. Right now, 50 to 52% of the American population do not believe that global warming is a major issue, doesn't believe it cannot be reversed, and doesn't mean it believe it's man-made. That has nothing to do with the truth. It has to do with who was able to control the debate, who bought the stories, who paid for the writers, who paid for the scientists. One of the things I'm doing in my documentary is I'm taking every anti-global warming argument and I'm deconstructing it. I'm also showing you the scientists who never had to claim when they went on television, who was behind them, who was funding them. Just like the generals and the colonels that you see on MSNBC and Fox and the other networks, they never tell you and they never ask, sir, are you paid by any organization, a foundation, anyone at all, as a consultant to provide a point of view? If they had to answer that, you wouldn't see one of the people currently on there who would be on there. They're coming because they have to promote a particular point of view. More often than not, they have to keep us in a state of terror to keep the money coming without question to the military-industrial intelligence machinery. So the biases on global warming, the politics behind it, the effort to try to suppress it, has been mammoth. And that's unfortunate. But thank you very much for bringing that to my attention. Kim, one more. Kim from New Jersey, your turn.
Hi, Gary.
Hi.
Question. What would you mention as being some of the most important parameters for someone other than a Republican or Democrat being able to win next year's election?
Okay, well, what I would do, with the exception of Ron Paul or Dennis Kucinich, I would exclude every single Democrat or Republican currently in office from even being considered, because none are progressive.
Right.
Bernie Sanders is progressive on some issues, not on others. What I would do is I would look, and I'm going to ask my guest Gerald Salonta his answer to this right after I finish answering you. I would look at every single person and see where do they stand. And then I would make a checklist. Remember, you're not going to have perfection from anyone. But do you have people willing to focus on the issues that are important? First and foremost, get us out immediately of Iraq and Afghanistan, get out of Pakistan, and close down 90% of America's military bases. Immediately, that would be able to put money that we would be taking out of our Medicare and Medicaid and school programs and food and helping people, and I would put that person, that becomes a plus.
Do you think that...
Let me finish this. Sure. Next, I would then look for someone who would propose laws that would prevent any American corporation from outsourcing any more jobs to another country. Third, I would make one flat tax that every corporation has to pay. Are you aware that 35% of all corporations in the United States paid no income tax last year? None. So if you have one flat income tax of 10% on every corporation with no exceptions, you eliminate the IRS. You can have sales taxes. You can have other taxes at the local level, but you should not tax a person's labor. Now, that would give you over $1 trillion more money. Then you keep jobs in America, and then I would start a program to incentivize bringing jobs back and manufacturing back and construction back into every town in the United States. Then you have to get an idea to stop the Federal Reserve, to actually close down the Federal Reserve, and eliminate the power of the International Monetary Fund. This would help not only stop the whole globalization, privatization, and I would stop all privatization. I would revert back those that are private, like prisons. I would decriminalize drugs. I would have rehabilitation programs. That's what I would suggest you seek in people. Now, you'll have some libertarians who support a lot of that. Some constitutional support it. I would also reinstate habeas corpus. I would reestablish that there's a sanctity in the individual, and I would go back to constitutional guarantees. I would deconstruct the entire military industrial establishment and get rid of probably 90% of all the spying and make things transparent. And I would open this up and put progressives in positions of power. You need Ralph Nader. You need Chris Hedges. You need a Cornel West. You need people who have solutions, but these are people who will never be invited even into dialogue, let alone have solutions. Gerald Salonta and others. are never invited into positions of the consult because they will not be compromised. We need people in positions of power who are not compromised. Right now, the Greens, the Constitutionalists, the Peace Party, and the Libertarians are all capable, in part, of being that. Now it's a matter of getting them to cooperate, put their egos aside, and to try to humanize the parts of their beliefs that wouldn't be compatible with being in office. That's my suggestion. Let's go over and say hello now to Gerald Salante. Welcome to our program, Gerald.
Oh, thanks for having me, Gary. It's always great being on with you.
Gerald, now for your answering the same question. If we know that the American public, in a majority of Democrats, don't want any more Democrats, they don't believe in their own party, a majority of Republicans don't believe in their own party, they all believe we should have a third party, but the Democrats and Republicans in power behind Wall Street and the major media they control know that the only way they can keep power is to keep a third party, especially a progressive third party, from ever being a reality, what then is your suggestion?
Well, as I see it, matter of fact, I just told an old friend of mine up here in Woodstock area, WDST Radio, that I wouldn't go on his show anymore because I was tired of getting into a confrontational arguments. I began the show by saying that conservatives believe and liberals lie. And when I say conservatives believe, I'm talking about those real hard, you know, right-wing conservatives. They believe things like, we got to fight them over there so we don't fight them over here. And we got to kill all them Muslims and bomb Iran. They actually believe it. Liberals, on the other hand, they lie. They lie about who Obama is. They have this dream about, oh, only if he did. If dogs don't make cats. And we wrote about who he was before he became president. This was no shock. And everybody expected him to be someone else. And now they're disappointed. So they make excuses. Well, you know, he's increased the war in Afghanistan. Well, you know, his hands are tied. He only can do so much. He has military pressures. Hey, you know, he's reinstated the Patriot Act, rendition, warrantless wiretapping. He's out Bush. Well, you know, he has to do some things. You know, he has to negotiate. He reinstated the Bush tax cuts. He promised he wouldn't do them. Well, he needs some negotiating room. They keep making excuses. They lie. They're intellectually capable of knowing that they're lying to themselves, but they will not accept that they've been had. And then when you go through the whole long laundry list of Obama atrocities, how's this one, Gary? I unilaterally decided that our core interests and those of our allies are at stake. So we're going to send humanitarian bombs down on the head of Libyans. Can you imagine if George Bush pulled that one off? Every little liberal wimpocrat would be screaming bloody murder. But hey, these are humanitarian bombs. It's a humanitarian mission. And you go down the list of all the Obama atrocities, Predator drones into Pakistan, on and on and on. Oh, what are they going to do now? More drilling? He just gave more oil, offshore drilling. They're pushing that through one after another. And they come back with, at the very end, well, what would you rather do, vote for McCain? It's the liberals that are keeping the lie in place. It's the liberals that are keeping progress from moving forward, because if they would expose the fraud for the fraud that he is, rather, I'm sick and tired of hearing these things about only if Obama was, only if Obama did. It's who he is. And, you know, it's Harvard, Princeton, Yale, Bullets, Bombs, and Banks Club. Black, white, green, yellow, it's what it is. Let's call it that. So by the liberals keeping the lie in place, there is no room for a progressive libertarian. There is no room for a third party because they will not let go of who they have. And we just saw in Florida, they just passed legislation where now it's almost impossible to put a third party candidate on the ballot.
All right, fair enough. Now, I'm going to go through several issues that I feel are very important to all of us. I believe that the Federal Reserve has committed an enormous disservice by giving trillions of dollars secretly to hedge funds, banks, corporations, and not a nickel to the average American or small business person. All this supposedly because 75% of all the treasuries that are buying the notes have to be bought by our own government because China and Japan and other countries are not buying the way they used to. What does this say about the future of the dollar? What does this say about the dollar remaining the currency of choice, which most people have to be aware that one of the reasons they have any value at all today in their dollars because it's the reserve currency. But now the BRICS nation, South Africa has now joined them with Brazil and China and India and Russia and South Africa. Now it's possible that they'll also be joined by Turkey. And even though this may seem out of place today, I'm still going to put it out there, by Germany. If the Eurozone and the 17 principles in the Eurozone have to continue to bail out countries like Ireland or Greece now, and Greece may default, and Greece may go the way of Iceland, and you'll see absolute catastrophe economically all over Europe. Your thoughts on Europe? Whether anyone else is going to follow Greeceland and do what Argentina did and tell the International Monetary Fund, we're not going to pay your money because to pay you the money, we have to then cut back pensions, welfare programs, food programs, jobs programs. We have to gut our society in order to give the bankers who caused this problem your money back. Argentina said no, and they survived and thrived. Iceland has now said no, and it's helping itself. Ireland may follow, Portugal may follow, Spain may follow, Greece may follow. And if that happens, you can bet your dollar that Germany, the strongest economic power in the European zone, may then go back to having the Deutschmark. Your thoughts on this?
Well, on the Federal Reserve, you mentioned that the money that they're giving, the $20 trillion, by the way, was the number that they did backdoor deals with. You know, I was never a conspiracy theorist. And I never believed in the New World Order. But it's clearly, it's there right in front of us. From the one-time reporting of who went to the Fed discount window in 2010, most of the money was borrowed by foreign banks. I mean, how could this happen? The Federal Reserve loaning all this money out to foreign banks? It's one big banking system, whether it's the European Monetary Union or the Federal Reserve or the IMF. I was on Russia Today yesterday talking about the Strauss-Kahn incident, the head of the IMF getting arrested for allegedly raping a woman. And again, you know, innocent until proven guilty. But I made it clear. I said, you know, if he is guilty, I said, this is just a continuation of IMF policies. Whether they rape a nation or rape a person, it's rape. And that's what's going on over here. The people have no power in this country or any country. It's a one big global Ponzi scheme, and the Ponzi scheme is collapsing. And by the way, those aren't my words. Those are Bernie Madoff's, a guy who knew a thing about a Ponzi scheme. Go to the February 27th New York Magazine taped interview of Bernie Madoff. It's a worthless article other than 2 points that were made in it. Madoff said when he got into Wall Street game, he realized that you had to be a member of the club and that the game is rigged. And then he said, the United States is no more than one big Ponzi scheme, which brings us back to the reserve currency. Countries around the world are bailing out of it. You see all of the prostitutes out there, led by the toilet paper of record, the New York Times, just in the last 2 days, coming out with these articles about really how stupid it is for people to invest in gold, and that their experts that they bring in say how readily it could collapse and point to the latest decline in commodity prices. Well, I've been trading gold since 1978, and we call the bottom of gold in 2001 in the Trends Journal. Gold has come down from its high of around $1,570 down to around $1,500. That's not a big fallback. That's a very small swing when the numbers go up. And this is the other thing that the prostitutes do in keeping you believing that you should hold on to that worthless paper that's not worth the paper it's not printed on. They say, oh, you know, gold fell from its high of $875 in 1980, and by today's standards, it actually should have been worth over $2,000. So in reality, an investment of gold would have been a bad investment compared to the changes in the S&P from that time. Here's the big lie, Gary. They should go back to when gold was $35 an ounce. Not when it hit its high in 1980. So if you use that as a yardstick, gold has outperformed those legacy stocks such as General Motors and Lehman Brothers and Merrill Lynch and right down the line AIGs, you name the companies. How about Cisco and those other companies who were riding high in the before the dot-com bubble burst in 2000? So the game, Gary, is to keep suckering people to play the Ponzi scheme so they could pay off the big insiders as they get the little people to put their money into the game, and that's what the Federal Reserve is doing by keeping interest rates so low, because you can't put your money in the bank and get any return on your deposit. So you're forced to play the game. And if there's a public enemy number one, it wasn't Osama bin Laden. It was Osama bin Bernanke, who's devaluing our dollar in front of our eyes and making all of us poorer.
Okay, I'd like for you, in the remaining time we have, take your time, we have about 5 minutes, and for our land-based stations, continue listening on the Progressive Radio Network or GaryNall.com, either one, when we go off of some of those stations in a few minutes. And I'm going to be doing an extended additional 2 hours over the network and some of our land-based stations in New York. Now, Gerald, take us through what's happening in Iceland, Ireland, Spain, Portugal, and why that's important for us to pay attention. Why it's important for us to look at what is happening in China and South Korea and the Philippines and Brazil. Because right now, in Spain, they're paying 104% on their debt, meaning their gross domestic product is not as high as the debt burden they're covering. Therefore, they are bankrupt, and so they have to slash people's pensions and everything else just to give money back to the banks who caused this in the first place. They've been willing to do this, but now that Iceland has set the stage by saying we're not going to do it and didn't fall off the face of the map, tell us what you see happening there and where you see our economy going. My last question will be this. I'm very concerned, extremely concerned, that we're entering in the next 1 to 3 years the beginning of social anarchy for about, I would say, 100 million people. And that means that we're doing nothing to help those people, and those people at some point are going to snap. Your thoughts, take your time, please.
On Iceland, Ireland, Portugal, there's no way out. As you mentioned earlier, Greeks are near default right now. You just can't keep printing money to bail it out. And let's understand what the word austerity measures means. It means cutting minimum wage. It means cutting services, charging more for the services that you get, taking away pensions and benefits, increasing taxes, and raising the retirement age till after you die. And that's what they're doing, and that's what the outrage is about. And when you go around the world and you look what's happening in the Middle East, it's the same fundamental reasons. It's that
Okay, yeah, hi. We just lost Gerald there. I'm not sure why. Hopefully we'll get him back. Just probably a technical issue. I'm going to be doing additional commentaries today on health and nutrition, in-depth on Children of the Corn. This is a look at fructose made from corn, what it does to us, and why we should not be consuming it. Also, Helen Caldicott, a special commentary on the Japanese nuclear disaster, but in an honest perspective. And we'll have that on also. Plus, we're going to be taking calls from people in the audience on different issues. And an in-depth look at our nuclear backup power. The tests show 32 U.S. nuclear reactors pose a threat. Why? What is the problem there? We'll deal with that as well. So we have an awful lot to talk about. Leading the way will be health issues and wellness issues. We're just trying to get Gerald back so we can finish off his comments. Sorry for the technical glitch. And let's see if we have him back on. If not, then... Hi, Gerald. Hi,
hey.
Gerald. Sorry for the dropout there.
That's all right. So as I was saying, what's going on in the Middle East is really a reflection of what's going on worldwide. And that is, we're seeing it's the same fundamental reasons. Young people having degrees can't get jobs, and corruption at the top. And yes, there's going to be social anarchy. And the one other thing to look at, Gary, very important, the True Finn Party in Finland that is against the European Union. And you need all the countries to be in agreement for a bailout. And they're refusing to join the party, the Finnish government, because they just won 19% of the vote, up from I think about 6% in the last election. And you're going to see more and more of this. But here's the thing that's going to derail everything that we're talking about. They're going to take us to war. And you saw it how easy it was with this whole Osama bin Laden fish story. I mean, my motto is think for yourself. I don't believe a word of any of this. But look how the people rallied around it. USA, USA. They'll get the people George W. Bush did it, Obama did it, and they're going to do it again. They're going to derail our minds from the economic problems and unify the nation under the guise of whether it's terrorism or war.
Last two questions. Where do you see our economy in about a year from now, and what role do you believe that electric magnetic storm that NASA was talking about that could virtually fry our entire electrical grid, throwing at least 250 million Americans into a panic, and we're not planning on that. By the way, that same electrical grid would be adversely affecting the coolant systems in every one of our 104 nuclear facilities, and we don't have any national dialoguing on that, and yet NASA says it's coming. It's coming. It's just to what degree we would be adversely affected.
In a year from now, the economy is going to continue to decline. There's absolutely no way out of this. And again, we also are telling people that as the terrorism fear continues to increase, there's going to be more and more restrictions. Look for an economic martial law, nothing less than that. We really believe that kind of thing is going to happen. And as you were mentioning about the magnetic fields, actually, in the top trends for 2011, we wrote about that as well, that the solar flares being predicted for around 2012, not just the usual flares on their 11-year cycle. These will be massive civilization-wrecking flares along the lines of the well-documented 1859 Carrington effect. And that that enormous magnetic storm, as we know, it blew out telegraph of the day. Now these storms could wipe out the entire internet system, as you point out. The nuclear plants, etc., won't have the capacity to deal with it. And we're facing very dire times ahead.
I appreciate you giving us your input, Gerald. We look forward to another conversation.
Oh, it's always great being on with you. Thank you so much, Gary.
Gerald Salonte, publisher of Trends Journal, and you can go to trendsresearch.com for more information. I'm Gary Knoll. For those of you who listen over the Internet or those of you listening on to some New York stations, we're continuing for another 2 hours. For everyone else, we look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Back in a moment.
Gary Knoll Show is produced in our New York City studio. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. The chief archivist is Sharon Pride. And the program director is Jason Tavenfeld.